On Friday, two Palestinian men were killed during the truce as well. Despite the ceasefire currently in effect, the Israeli army has again warned Palestinians not to travel toward the northern Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, the armed wing of Hamas, the Ezzedine Al-Ghassan Brigade, says that the commander of its northern brigade and three other military leaders were killed during Israeli attacks in the past 50 days. A third phase of the exchange of Palestinian prisoners and Israeli captives held by Hamas under the truce deal is expected to take place in a few hours. 39 Palestinian inmates are expected to be released today. 13 people held captive in Gaza are also scheduled to be freed. A total of 26 Israelis, 78 Palestinians, and 14 Thais and one Filipino have been released since the four-day truce started on Friday. Hamas says that 50 captives are to be freed in return for 150 Palestinian women and children in Israeli jails under the truce deal. The resistance group says it's ready to release all captives if all Palestinian prisoners are released.
Israel persecutes Palestinians by malign detainment practices. There are currently about 8,000 Palestinians in Israeli jails, including 3,000 detained over the past 7 weeks since the events of October 7th. Over 2,000 of the detainees are being held under administrative detention. Those legally charged are judged by Israeli military courts with a near total conviction rate. There are hundreds of children among the detainees. At least 700 Palestinian children under 18 are prosecuted every year by Israel. Administrative detention refers to detention without charge or trial. The practice is illegal under international law. Under the prisoners' exchange deal between Israel and Hamas, several dozen Palestinian prisoners, mostly women and children, will be released. Two of the prominent released prisoners are Marah Bekir, a 24-year-old girl who was released after 8 years in prison. She was brutally injured and detained by the Israeli police in 2015 when she was 16 years old. During her detention, she was abused and humiliated by Israeli security staff. Malek Soleiman, another 24-year-old girl, released after 8 years in prison. She was kidnapped as a 16-year-old by the Israeli police on her way back from school.
Now, Israel has released 78 Palestinian prisoners in the first 2 days of a four-day ceasefire deal with Hamas, most of them women and children. Among those freed are 14-year-old Mohammed Sabah and 16-year-old Saad Abu Samra, who were held under administrative detention for 1 to 2 years. They recall what they suffered ahead of the release and hailed the resistance for their freedom.
The situation is very difficult in jail. Mainly in the last period after the resistance operation, more strict measures have been adopted by the occupation's prison administration. We have not been informed that we will be released. The jailers took us claiming we would be meeting with prison officials, and then after hours, we knew we were part of the resistance swap deal. I cannot describe my feelings, and we hope all the prisoners would be released.
The Israeli prison authorities confiscated all the prisoners' belongings, radios, food. We were not allowed to call our families or watch TV that usually we do for an hour or less. They only left mattresses to sleep on inside the cells. I cannot believe that we are free. We really thank the resistance. We will never forget what they have done, and we are with them till victory and end of occupation.
May Allah have mercy on the martyrs in Gaza. There's nothing to say, but may Allah be with the resistance side.
Now, a senior official from the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees has described the humanitarian situation in Gaza as dangerous, calling for the delivery of more aid to the besieged territory.
With regard to aid for Gaza City and the north of the Gaza Strip, UNRWA, with the help of its partners and the Red Crescent, was able to transfer a large amount of aid on Friday and Saturday. The aid was distributed to shelters and outside them. The humanitarian situation in northern Gaza is dangerous. There is no drinking water and no food, so the aid we are sending is important. Today, we are also sending convoys towards Gaza City and northern Gaza. The humanitarian situation is dangerous in southern Gaza as well. The humanitarian needs are important and unprecedented. We should send 200 lorries a day continuously for at least 2 months to meet the needs. We need to send more significant amounts of fuel so that the services we provide to them can be fueled.
A funeral procession has been held in the occupied West Bank for five Palestinians killed in the latest Israeli raid in Jenin. Mourners condemned the Israeli crimes and urged the international community to take action. Regime forces raided Jenin earlier today, firing indiscriminately. They also encircled the city's hospital. The attack left five people dead. Three others were also killed in Nablus, El Bira, and Kabatia. Some 340 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli settlers and forces in the occupied West Bank since October 7th. The Islamic Jihad movement says that the Israeli actions are aimed at exterminating Palestinians and implementing the regime's displacement plan and settlement expansion. Now, a tanker linked to Israel has been seized off the coast of Yemen. That, according to the ship's managers, the incident involved a central tank vessel owned and managed by a UK-based Israel Link company. The boarding took place offshore from the Yemeni port city of Aden. A maritime security firm said that the U.S. Navy forces are, quote, engaged in the situation. No group has immediately claimed responsibility, but it just came a day after the Yemeni forces seized an Israeli cargo vessel in the Red Sea, and what they said was a response to the regime's massacre of Palestinians in Gaza. The Yemeni army has also recently launched several rounds of missile and drone attacks against Israel. It says the military operations against Israel will go on until the regime stops its atrocities in Gaza. Rallies have been held across the globe in solidarity with Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and the Gaza Strip. In Germany, hundreds of pro-Palestine ralliers demonstrated in Frankfurt, calling for a free Gaza and free Palestine. In Italy, demonstrators took to the streets of Milan, demanding an end to the Israeli genocide in Gaza. They voiced their support for Palestinians in Gaza, calling for a permanent ceasefire in the besieged territory. In Sri Lanka, too, protesters gathered in front of the U.S. Embassy in Colombo, condemning Washington's support and arms delivery to Israel during the war. Pro-Palestine ralliers also marched in the British capital, London.
A peaceful march for peace. As the bombs temporarily stop falling from the sky above Gaza, hundreds of thousands of pro-Palestine demonstrators of all faiths are back to the streets of the British capital, many traveling from other parts of the UK, united in their demands.
We need to cease fire, we need to end the siege in Gaza, we need to end the occupation and free Palestine.
A long-term solution is an immediate ceasefire, longer-term ceasefire. It is an end to the system of apartheid. It is an end to the occupation. It is an end to the oppression and systematic oppression that has been going on for the last 75 years.
Demands is obviously that Israel stops this genocide, that they allow the people to go back to their homes in Gaza, that they stop pushing them out towards the deserts.
More than 1,500 police officers were on duty, distributing leaflets warning demonstrators against the use of, quote, racist abuse and promoting terrorism, raising questions about proportionality.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure on the police being put on them by the government to put a stamp down on these protests. You know, these protests are accused of being anti-Semitic, but really, these are just ordinary workers who can understand what's happening, who can see through the establishment lies, the propaganda.
What they're also demanding is that the UK government stop arming the Israeli regime and withdraw its diplomatic cover for it.
Western governments have suffered major reputational damage for their continued support for the Israeli regime's crimes against Palestinians. And the people here are highlighting Western double standards with regard to the protection of civilians in different conflicts.
Well, we see it all over. When it was the Ukrainian issue, you know, the flags were out, everyone's talking about it. Right now, it's silence across every political spectrum. Labour, nothing. Conservative, nothing. You know, and their parties that we're not going to be voting for. So, yes, we need to basically, you know, this has to be the forefront of all political activity.
The four-day truce offers some hope to these demonstrators that it might mean the beginning of the end and a breath of fresh air to more than 2 million Gazans left with few options for survival. This is the seventh protest of the kind in as many weeks, and the organizers say as long as the killing continues, so will they. Saipur is up, London.
Palestine will be free has become a popular slogan at demonstrations around the world. In Seoul on Saturday, the 10th protest here against Israel's attack on Gaza, a young teacher outlined the scope of Israeli mass murder of young Palestinians.
More than 6,000 Palestinian children have lost their lives in unimaginably horrific ways, and even newborn babies were killed. Our children who should be happy at school, learning to read, learn numbers, sing and draw, and hang out with their friends, terrorists?
Hani Mansour has attended several of the rallies and marches in support of Palestinians. He argues that Palestinians are justified in defending and fighting for their homeland, and it is the U.S. hegemonic self-interest that's behind Washington's support of the illegal Israeli occupation.
America wants to dominate the world, and when Israel was established, it wanted dominance over the entire Middle East. So if people are exploited and regions are exploited, America is not harmed at all, but is the first beneficiary of everything that happens in the world.
While genocide is more and more often applied to Israel's seemingly indiscriminate attacks on Gaza, a linguistic debate is raging, putting the slaughter of thousands of people into context. Around the world, Israel appears to be losing that debate amid growing demands for a lasting truce. The ongoing release of detainees on both sides may represent some degree of optimism. Still, Israel maintains it will continue its war on Gaza. But demonstrations like this one are driving home the fact that the broader issue of Israel's occupation of Palestinian lands will eventually need to be resolved. Frank Smith, Seoul.
A number of Italian journalists are calling for the freedom of information in Gaza. They say it's become impossible to cover the situation there. Max Civelli has more.
A group of Italian journalists, representatives of media unions and organizations, gathered at the Roman Press Association in Rome to discuss how the ongoing conflict in the Gaza Strip has been biasedly covered by the media so far. The initiative was organized by the No Gag Network, a group that advocates for freedom of expression in Italy, as Palestinian and international journalists trapped in the coastal territory continue to be slaughtered by the Israeli occupation forces.
As of today, we don't know if these journalists have been executed or they have been killed in their homes together with their beloved ones during the Israeli bombardments. And I ask you, would that make any difference? It is horrific anyway.
During the meeting, journalists agreed that a war needs field reporting, condemning Israel's refusal to heed calls to allow independent reporters to access Gaza for direct testimony. Since October 9, the 2.3 million residents of Gaza have been experiencing a devastating near-complete communications blackout.
Killing a journalist is a war crime, and we call on the International Criminal Court to proceed with the examination into what's happening in Gaza.
The Italian journalists also relaunched a petition already signed by 200 French, Palestinian and Lebanese journalists demanding access to Gaza and the protection of journalists covering the Israeli onslaught on the Strip.
La libertà d'informazione viene seppellita sotto le macerie.
Freedom of expression has been buried under Gaza's rubble. Only journalists embedded with the IOF are in Gaza, operating under the observation of Israeli commanders in the field.
Speaking of freedom of expression, the future of journalism in Italy looks bleak. there has been a big question mark over the credibility of Italian media outlets in recent years, as the sharp divide between the mainstream media and a large chunk of public opinion has been growing deeper.
The divide is getting deeper and deeper. Much of the public opinion does not follow mainstream TVs and newspapers anymore. They have totally lost trust in them. And it is understandable. The media keeps saying the conflict in Gaza started on October 7.
Meanwhile, Italy's Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani has urged Israel to use the four-day ceasefire in Gaza to carefully consider what the international perception is of its offensive against the Strip. Max Civili, Rome.
Now that report brings us to the end of this news broadcast from Tehran. Thank you for being with us.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Listeners Special. In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special on this Sunday, November 26, 2023. I'm Atefe Irfani, hosting this program today. And here, at the start of our today's Listeners Special, I do express my condolences to you, dear listeners, on the martyrdom anniversary of Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace upon her, the daughter of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, which, according to a narrative, happens to be tomorrow. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and as you may know, this program is where your views are presented through your emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. And of course, we've received reception reports as well as emails and letters from around the world, which I mentioned some of your names here. And later during the program, I will read your emails. We have reception reports from Abdul Alim from India, from Diego Garcia Diaz from Spain, and from Marcus Reich from Germany. So Abdul Alim, Diego Garcia, and Marcus, thank you very much for sending us these reception reports. We want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio and the Listeners Special program. And Ram Babu Kumar, one of our old and regular listeners from India, has sent us a piece of email. From Austria, we've received an email from one of our old and regular listeners, from Harald Seuss. Of course, we've received an email from Marcus Reich from Germany. Diego Garcia Diaz from Spain has sent us a piece of email. And the last, but not the least, is an email from India, from Abdul Alim, who is one of our regular listeners. Stay with us, please. I will be back with you. Thank you. So, dear listeners, let's see what Ram Babu Kumar, one of our old and regular listeners from India, says. Dear friends, greetings from India. Please send me the program schedule with some written materials on my postal address if possible. I'm writing for your response. Thanks and regards. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Ram Babu Kumar from India. And thank you very much for writing to IRIB English Radio and listeners special program. Of course, your views about our programs are always welcome, Ram Babu Kumar. So we would be glad if you, in your upcoming emails or letters, you could tell us your views about our broadcast. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. Thank you for writing to us. An electronic QSL or QSL will be soon sent to you as verification to this email, Ram Babu Kumar. From Austria, Harald Seuss, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us a piece of email. Harald says, "Dear staff, I could receive an IRIB program. I have made a reception report. Please see the attachment. If my report is correct, I would ask you if you can verify it by a QSL card. I send you and all the colleagues in your English department my best wishes. Best regards." First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Harald Seuss from Austria. And thank you very much for writing to us at IRIB English Radio, and thank you for your beautiful wish. We also wish you all the best in your life and in your work. And EQSL or electronic QSL will soon be sent to you as a verification to your email, Harald Seuss from Austria. Welcome back. Marcus Reich from Germany says, "I am contacting you with a reception report of your broadcast. Thank you for taking the time to read my report. I hope you found it useful. If this reception report is accurate, please verify it with an EQSL or email confirmation. Thank you." First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, Marcus Reich from Germany. Many thanks for writing to IRIB English Radio and listeners a special program. Of course, my colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL as confirmation to your email. Thank you again. We would be very glad if you could tell us your views about our programs in your upcoming emails, Marcus from Germany. Thank you very much for writing to us. We wish you all the best. So let's see what Diego Garcia Diaz from Spain says. Diego says, "Dear staff, my name is Diego Garcia Diaz and I'm writing to you from Salamanca, Spain. I'd like to receive QSL if it is possible. I don't know if you send QSL on paper by post. If it isn't possible, I'd like to receive an EQSL. Thank you very much for your attention." Salam Garcia and warm greetings to you, of course, from Tehran and from IRIB English Radio. Please accept our warm appreciations to you for this writing, for this email. My colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL as confirmation to this email. We would be very glad if you could tell us your views about our broadcast in your upcoming emails, Diego Garcia Diaz from Spain. Thank you again. We wish you all the best. So here we have an email from Abdul Alim from India. Abdul Alim says, "Dear sir or madam, I am a DXer and love listening to international radios. I have been sending reception reports to the radios worldwide. I request you to send me new calendar and other promotional items. It would be greatly appreciated if you sent one. Salam and warm greetings to you, Abdul Alim from India. Please accept our warm appreciations to you for writing to us. So, you are a DXer and you have the hobby to listen to international radios, and this time you were able to catch the signals of IRIB English Radio. So, we're so happy to hear that you were able to receive the signals of IRIB English Radio. Abdul Alim from India, please accept our electronic QSL as confirmation for this email. And of course, you can receive the frequency schedule at our website at parstoday.ir/en. We wish you all the best and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And here we come to the end of our today's edition of Listeners Special. But before saying goodbye to you, I do express my warm appreciations and gratitude to those of you who have kindly sent us reception reports as well as emails and letters from around the world, including Abdul Alim from India, Diego Garcia Diaz from Spain, Marcus Reich from Germany, Ram Babukumar from India, Harald Seuss from Austria. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio and Listeners Special, again, I do express my condolences to you on the martyrdom anniversary of Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace upon her, the daughter of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, which, according to a narrative, happens to be on Monday tomorrow. Well, dear listeners, please keep in touch with us. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio,
Now let's listen to Sheikh Salim Bimji.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Tonight the topic is more of how when we put everything together, and what we want to look at is the concept of a functional family. Ayatollah Makarem says, we need to do everything in our disposal as a community of believers to ensure that we can help the next generation especially facilitate an easy and an early and an accessible marriage, that they stay within the folds of Islam, that they stay within the boundaries of the followers of Ahlul Bayt. And unfortunately, many times I have seen, and I'm sure, again, not myself, but many others have also seen, that parents become the biggest obstacle in the lives of their children wanting to serve Allah. It's strange because as parents, we should always want the best for our children, especially as it relates to their connection to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We never, you know, wish bad or evil for our children. We want to see them not only excel and do good, but do better than us. That they become more educated than us, more financially stable than us, more spiritual than us, more equipped, more ready for the 12th Imam than us. But unfortunately, I've seen so many occasions where parents become the barriers and the impediments to their children to, you know, travel that path towards Allah. I remember a father years ago, he had three or four children. The mother, from what I remember, she had passed away of a terminal illness when the children were in their younger days. And as these brothers and sisters, siblings grew up, and they're at the age of marriage, 20, 25, 30, because the father was a so-called mullah, he was so-called religious, he had read a few books, didn't study, you know, in the house officially, but he was recognized as a good orator and a person who knew a bit about religion. Every time a possible suitor came to his son or daughter for marriage, without even asking about the person, inquiring about the akhlaq, the morality, he would take out the Quran and do the istikhara. And believe you me, every time if the istikhara came out bad, he would be, well, look, Allah doesn't want this marriage to happen. I'm sorry, you can't marry my child. When it came out good, he would make up excuses. For this reason and that reason, you know, this boy is not good, this girl is not good. Long story short, these children in their mid-30s, and they were not married. And those that did get married, they were marrying girls of the Canadian society who were not Muslims, and they didn't convert. Why? Not because they didn't want to get married to a righteous Muslim, Shia. No, their father was the barrier there, right? We've unfortunately taken this istikhara culture and taken it to an extreme, which is an entirely different topic. I don't want to get into it. But we've so abused and misused istikhara that I've seen people that they won't even cross the street without getting an istikhara done. Like, come on, where is your intellect? Where is your brain? God gave you a brain. Do you ever see the Prophet or the Imams using istikhara? Did Imam Hussein say, well, let me do an istikhara before I go to Karbala. Maybe it might come out good and bad and I should change my plans and go to somewhere else? No, but we've unfortunately, some of us have become so habituated to the istikhara, right, that we can't even think. Now, I don't mean to say that they have no benefit. No, istikhara has benefit. It has usage when we know the usage of it, when we know the steps that we follow which precede it if we have to do it. But we don't say that, okay, you know, somebody has come to propose to my daughter, so I won't investigate into his background or his bio or who he is. I'll just do the istikhara and blindly accept it. I've seen that happen. And I've seen that husband who was married through a good istikhara again be verbally abusive to his wife. And she asks her parents or her mother and father, her siblings, right? The istikhara came out good. My husband is abusing me. Where is the goodness in my marriage today? Right? As if Allah, na'udhu billah, has brought this turmoil on her head because it came out so-called good. Well, what does that good mean? What does bad mean, right? This is, again, a different topic altogether. But we have to recognize, brothers and sisters, that Allah can never be used as a scapegoat when it comes to issues, especially like that of marriage. So one of the best things, and I'll move on with this, is that when we have communities where we have matchmakers, and I've seen this in many of our communities, there'll be an uncle or an auntie in the community that she knows the girls, maybe her husband knows the boys in the community, and they will talk and things will get done. This is how many marriages have happened. And you know, we have multiple ahadith that speak about this method. Right? It's not just, you know, modern technology and you have an app like Shia Match and you can find your life partner on an application or a website. No, we have direct hadith about people being intermediaries. So for example, we have a hadith from Imam Ali alayhi salatu wassalam. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. In which he's quoted as saying, أَفْضَلُ الشَّفَاعَاتِ أَن تَشْفَعَ بَيْنَ اثْنَيْنِ فِي النِّكَاحِ حَتَّى يَجْمَعَ اللَّهُ بَيْنَهُمَا. The best of intercessors is the intercession done between two people, meaning a man and a woman, to facilitate a marriage until Allah allows or facilitates that marriage to take place. Imam Ali says the best form of shafa'at, of interceding, of being an intermediary, is when you act as that facilitator to find a match in your community. Right? It's the best form of intermediating, of helping in the community. And the Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. He takes it a step further in a hadith, and when he was asked about this action of somebody who becomes a matchmaker, a facilitator of marriage in a community, he said the following. He said, for every physical step, every khutwa that a person takes to help a man and a woman get married, to mediate and to kind of pair them up, or every word that they say in this regard, they're given the reward equivalent to 1 year of worship. 1 year of worship as if you stayed awake all day fasting and you spent the entire night standing in ibadat. Can you imagine, brothers and sisters, in order to get a young man and a young woman together, it's not going to be one phone call. It's going to be multiple calls or text messages or, you know, things going back and forth. How many thousands of words you would say? How many times you'll drive back and forth? Maybe go to see the girl, go to see her family, go to the boy's family. Maybe arrange for a chaperone meeting in a restaurant or a cafe. You'll maybe drive hundreds of kilometers, thousands of steps you'd have taken. And if you have your smartwatch on, you can count every step you've taken to calculate your thawab. For every step, for every word, it's 1 year of worship you're getting the reward of. Right, so as a community, we have to recognize that Islam has given us, again, ways to make it through these opportunities. They're not challenges, they're opportunities. Right, and we have the teachings as we've been going through these last nights. Islam has given us practical steps to, you know, counter any episode we come across in our life. We have to just go to the source and go to the city of knowledge, go to the door of the city of knowledge, go to Amir al-Mu'mineen and the family of Ali and the Prophet and the Quran, and we will get the guidance that we so dearly deserve.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حالي حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
In the limelight.
Bills and prices in Scotland have raced ahead of wages and benefits in the past year and show no signs of slowing down significantly. So it's a worrying time for many people in Scotland. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. ITV Network has covered this story and tells us more. According to research released by Citizens Advice Scotland, almost half of people in Scotland say energy bills are their biggest financial concern this winter. The charity has launched a new campaign called Worried This Winter to encourage people who are worried about energy bills to seek advice from the Citizens Advice Network. Based on analysis of a YouGov opinion poll on a sample size of 1,000, Citizens Advice Scotland research estimated 2.2 million people in Scotland, or 48% of adults, were worried about their energy bills. The research also estimated more than 1.4 million are worried about not being able to heat their homes effectively over the winter. Consumers can seek advice online, or visit their local Citizens Advice Bureau or specialist services like the Money Talk team. The average gain from energy-related advice across the network was more than £400. Citizens Advice Scotland Chief Executive Derek Mitchell said, "As the weather turns cold, it's perfectly understandable that people are worried about their energy bills and keeping their homes warm." He said, "We've faced the worst cost of living crisis in living memory, and people have had their financial resilience worn down." Derek Mitchell further said, "Our new campaign says to people it's okay to be worried this winter, because the Citizens Advice Bureau network is here to help you regardless of your background or circumstances. Our advice is free, impartial and confidential." Mitchell added, "Lots of people may not realise that they don't have to go to a Citizens Advice Bureau to get advice and information from our network. We have online self-help tools and advice pages that can help you see where you can cut your costs, boost your income, and understand your rights with your energy supplier." Scottish Government Energy Minister Gillian Martin admitted, "Energy bills remain significantly higher than this time 2 years ago, so campaigns like this are vitally important to ensure consumers are receiving the support that they need." The Daily Record has also covered this story and tells us more. The British newspaper The Daily Record has also covered the same story and tells us more. More than 1.3 million Scots are struggling to make ends meet on their current income due to soaring inflation. Citizens Advice Scotland analysed new research from a YouGov opinion poll and found almost a third of people are struggling to pay their bills on their salary. Citizens Advice Scotland is now encouraging Scots who are worried about money or bills to seek help from their local Citizens Advice Bureau. The Scottish Government claimed it was already helping the least well-off in society despite its limited powers. Citizens Advice Scotland spokesman Miles Fitt said, "Many of us are feeling the squeeze of the cost of living crisis, but it's still startling to see well over a million people are estimated to be finding it difficult on their present incomes." Miles Fitt added, Bills and prices have raced ahead of wages and benefits in the past year and shown no signs of slowing down significantly. It's a worrying time for many people. He added, "There's nothing to be embarrassed about when well over a million of us are worried about money. It's affecting so many of us." A Scottish government spokeswoman said, "The combined impact of a decade of austerity and economic mismanagement by the British government and the economic damage of a hard Brexit means people in Scotland are facing an unprecedented cost of living crisis." She added, "Much of the Scottish government's resources are going towards mitigating this as far as we can with the limited powers and fixed budget available to us. Tackling poverty and child poverty in particular is central to the work of the Scottish government and the policies of this government, including the game-changing Scottish child payment, and mean that an estimated 90,000 fewer children will live in poverty in Scotland this year." The website, The National, has also reported on the same story. According to the Joseph Rowntree Foundation charity, 500,000 people are in very deep poverty in Scotland, with statistics showing women and ethnic minorities are disproportionately at risk. It looked at relative poverty, very deep poverty, and in-work poverty, and found housing costs were particularly detrimental to working families. According to a new Joseph Rowntree Foundation State of the Nation report, more than 1 million people, including about 250,000 children, are living in relative poverty, while a tenth of the Scottish population, nearly 500,000 people, are living in very deep poverty. It showed that 60% of children living in poverty have at least one parent who works, and one-tenth of workers were paid below the real living wage for at least 4 in 5 years. People from a minority ethnic background experience a rate of in-work poverty more than triple the rate for white workers, while 70% of those trapped in persistent low pay were women and another 70% were single. Almost three-quarters of families impacted by in-work poverty have at least one person working in retail, hospitality industry, healthcare and social work, administrative and support services, and or manufacturing. Housing costs had a huge impact, with 110,000 people in working families pulled into poverty due to their housing costs. The charity said the British government is in denial over the cost of living crisis and that a work-first approach had failed to reduce poverty along with changes to universal credit. First Minister Humza Yousaf has pledged to call on the British government to legislate for an essential guarantee to ensure universal credit should protect people from going without the essentials. The Joseph Rowntree Foundation Associate Director for Scotland, Chris Burt, said, "The Scottish government can still meet its child poverty reduction targets, but it needs to get a move on." Chris Burt added, "While the Scottish child payment is providing crucial support to families and starting to drive poverty down again, it isn't enough. A major reason for that is the failure of work to be a reliable route out of poverty, particularly for women. Some of our biggest industries are trapping people in low pay, unreliable hours, and underemployment." Chris Burt added, "There are things governments can and should do, but businesses need to engage with their workforces to ensure employees are able to secure an income that supports them to get by." Chris Burt noted, "At the same time, decision makers are sleepwalking towards another winter that promises to be crushing for households across Scotland. The Scottish Government will need to react to this in its forthcoming budget, but the British Government in particular seems to believe the cost of living crisis is over. And that is wrong." You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Besides defending geographical borders, martyrs defend religious, spiritual, and cultural borders.
This is part of the speech delivered on November 21st, 2021, by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the officials in charge of conducting the Martyrs of Ilam commemoration ceremony.
یکی از خصوصیات دیگر ایلام حضور همه جانبه همه قشرا بود تا از عالم برجسته فاضل اونجا مرحوم عاشق عبدالرحمن حیدری رحمت الله علیه که در میمکم با ما بود بنده اون بالا ایشونم مرحوم عاشق عبدالرحمن چند بار بنده آمدم چه قبل از ریاست جمهوری چه بعد از او.
Another characteristic of Ilam was the wholehearted presence of people from all social backgrounds, from scholars to the common people. For instance, the late Sheikh Abdul Rahman Haydari, may God's mercy be upon him, was with me on the Meymak Hills. He was with me at the top of that summit. He was with me everywhere I went. I visited Ilam several times, both before and after my presidency. He was always present in the field of battle as long as he was alive. He would take his gun and was ready to fight at all times in the true sense of the word. The same is true of the common people and the numerous tribes in Ilam. Those who could fight were present in the field and the masses of the people helped in the resistance. One of the gentlemen in the meeting stated that the people did not leave the city. I myself saw this with my own eyes in the city of Ilam. The enemy planes would regularly strike the city repeatedly. In those times, no one would remain on the streets and the people would go to one of the deserts or forests around the city. After the bombardment had finished, they would go back to the city. That is, this way of leaving and coming back to the city had become a routine activity for the people. But they never completely left the city or the province, and they stood firm.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
خب وقت در زیر همین بمباران هاست، در همین شرایط سخت است که یک نخبه نابغه‌ای مثل شهید رضایی نژاد تربیت میشه.
It was during the time of those bombardments and in that difficult situation that a genius, namely Martyr Rezai Nejad, grew up. Martyr Rezai Nejad was a nuclear scientist who was martyred. His scientific importance was so immense that the enemy felt his existence would help the Islamic Republic progress, and so they assassinated him. They martyred him in front of his wife and small daughter. That young scientist had spent his youth witnessing those bombardments and those difficult circumstances in Elam.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrors fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty